Today is February 26, 2018. This is Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. We have five work sessions scheduled for today, so we'll go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 4143.
Ms. Ames.
Mr. Chair, I guess this is the first we've done bills in here. So the LFO has a work session memo on OLIS that is sort of the script. So just to walk you through. This is a governor's bill. It establishes a pilot project to determine the effectiveness of immediate access to treatment for persons who overdose on opioids or opiates. In particular, this model includes use of peer recovery support mentors to make that immediate connection at the emergency room to get people hooked up with treatment and resources. The bill includes a $2 million general fund appropriation, which is mostly to support the grants or contracts to four different counties to support the pilot. $200,000 of it will pay for one position to oversee the program, as well as an external evaluation of the pilot. The bill has a couple other smaller changes. It does require certain practitioners to register with the prescription monitoring system by July 1. And it requires DCBS to study barriers to effective treatment for substance use disorders that are a result of our current payment structure. And there is no amendments.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Please.
I have had the privilege of participating on this task force since its initiation. We see this as the first step. Our set of steps in addressing a really significant problem for our state. I'd like to thank Jeff Rhodes from the Governor's Office for his excellent work in facilitating it, and the wide range of stakeholders who've participated in a very active and constructive way on this. And so I'm very excited we're taking this next step. I hope that all providers understand the importance of registering with and using the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, which is one of the best tools we have to ensure that these dangerous substances aren't being inappropriately prescribed. The converse side is, I hope that nobody thinks we're saying never prescribe opiates, because sometimes they are the most appropriate drug to treat certain kinds of pain, especially acute pain. So I think this is a really great first step, and I'm very excited to be moving this forward, and we still have a lot of work to do.
All right, with that, a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4143 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Stana Hayward has moved House Bill 4143 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Yes, Representative Buehler.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Rainfield. Maybe you just help me with the process here. So this is a $2 million fiscal. What's our budget? Or what's our target for our allocation? So there's lots of competing goals here. So
are you talking about as holistically as the state of Oregon, or are you talking
about within what we're talking about today, human services? What's our budget for this session?
So a lot of these bills are actually viewed in the context of the entire state, and so that would be something you'd want to talk with the big co-chairs in terms of finite numbers for various policy decisions.
So basically, we don't know what our budget is for human services?
I'm sorry, Chair. Go ahead.
Yes, there is no specific budget within the Human Services Subcommittee. These are policy bills, and the determination of how the money is being spent and allocated is done as you look at holistically for the state of Oregon.
So why is it even here? Why doesn't it just go straight to... I mean, what's the purpose of what we're doing here today?
So it's the same purpose that we did during the long session. When policy bills come down to the subcommittee, we then vet them and then send them back out.
But they've
and
already
then the
been
full committee will.
They've already been vetted as policy bills.
We're vetting them from a budget perspective,
okay,
Representative.
So what's our budget?
But Representative, I think the confusion is this, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Oh, please.
We are given during the long session, we are given a target budget for the agencies that we oversee, right? And that's where we're given what we call a budget box. That's the total amount that this subcommittee is allowed to spend, basically. But policy bills are always considered separate from budget bills. The fiscals associated with this are not assigned specifically to a specific subcommittee. They are considered by the subcommittee that does work related to the policy and the underlying bill. So all the bills we're seeing today are related to health and human services issues. But these are not we are not given a target. The presiding officers and the co-chairs of Full Ways and Means are the ones who decide based on economic forecast and other known expenses, rebalances and things like that in base budgets, what money we have available to safely spend on policy bills. And they then make decisions after hearing from advocates and detractors on both sides about which policy bills they're going to allocate the funds to, and whether they're going to allocate all that was asked for or part of it or what. So the only bills we see are bills that the presiding officers and the co-chairs, the big co-chairs, have agreed that we can see, and their budgets are not specifically allocated to our committee. The bills are allocated to our committee to work to run from a budget perspective, but otherwise not.
And as you know, there are tons of requests that come into the legislature that well exceed any revenue that we have in this state. And so collectively, as you look at the various members of the body, decisions are made as which ones fit those values, and then those are the bills that funnel down to the subcommittees.
That's all good words, Smith, in all due respect. What's our purpose? What is our purpose of this committee? If we don't know that, if these are policy bills that have already been approved, and we don't know our budget, what's our purpose today?
We do know a budget.
Then share with me.
There is a collective budget for the state of Oregon, right? And then we have money that is set aside for various policy bills. The specific amount of money, is that something you would want to talk with the big co-chairs about? Your vote today, when you vote right now, your vote today is going to be on whether you want to prioritize this and spend Oregon's money on this bill, or whether you would prefer not to. And that's what your vote means in this committee.
Prioritize means an allocation based on other options. Yeah. And I don't even know what our box is.
All the bills that have referred to Ways and Means are available on OLIS. Yeah. You can get a list on OLIS of all bills that have been assigned to Ways and Means. And that's the universe that we're considering from, the presiding officers consider from. I don't remember what the bottom line number is about what the total, I'd be speaking off the top of my head, and I'm reluctant to do that, about what the total that we have available in discretionary funds based on the economic forecasts and things is. And so I can't tell you, but it's not allocated per committee. It's allocated by the presiding officers based on all of the available policy bills.
So further discussion. Yes, Representative Hayden.
Thank you, co-chairs. One of my concerns with the bill is that this has a July 1st, 2018 for all practitioners to register. I think the logistics of that would be much less complicated if it rolled in when their licensure was renewed, rather than kind of the new credentialing type idea. So I have concerns. I've met with both the Oregon Health Authority and the governor's office about that. But the rulemaking process doesn't really allow them. I understand that there is no penalty, but we're really putting forward something that I believe will not be met in the time frames that we're putting it forward. So I have concern about that.
Mr. Chair, yeah. If I may, to address that concern.
Yes, Senator.
That was an issue we considered seriously, Representative Hayden. The concern is that many practitioners are on two-year renewal cycles. And for example, physicians and physician assistants, we just renewed at the end of 2017, and we won't be renewing again until the end of 2019. And that would mean that we could risk a significant number of people who prescribe the vast majority of these drugs not being under any obligation to register with the PDMP until the end of 2019, and we thought that was an unreasonable delay in this important issue. You're right, there's no penalty, and I've already talked with all the professional associations, I know others have as well, who have committed to doing significant public education of their members, and the licensing boards as well will be doing that. So you're right, it's not ideal. It would be better if we did it as part of licensure, but given the licensure cycles in the state, that wasn't practicable.
Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the bill. I think that even at $2.2 million, I'd almost say pennies on the dollar for the savings we could experience by taking care of the opioid crisis. But Representative Buehler brings up an interesting point. I've sat on Ways and Means now for a year. I've been trying to find that box, and I'm being denied that information And as voting on a Ways and Means on this, budget's my expertise, and I work with Senator Devlin trying to understand, and I understand why they keep it secret, but I get so many asks for so many millions of dollars for things. I don't know how big the amount is we have to deal with, so I can't prioritize. But we can't do enough in this field because we're going to save millions of dollars down the road. So,
further discussion? With that, objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Senator Steyer, do you want to carry that to the full and to the floor?
Yeah.
Okay, and then on the House side, Representative Maelstrom, here to open on the floor. All right, with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4143, open up a work session on House Bill 4079.
You can just keep that work session open and open another one.
Which one do you want
to open? So we'll go to this one, and then I can...
Actually, I'm going to request to move that to the end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so let's...
We'll move to Kim, then. Okay. We'll go to this one and move that...
Right before.
But don't close the work session.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 4133.
Because he wants to do the one at the end.
I requested to do that at the end. Representative McEwen's here.
Okay, so 4133. Please. Okay, co-chairs, the next item on your agenda is House Bill 4133. It creates an 11 to 15 member maternal mortality and morbidity review committee in the Oregon Health Authority. The committee is charged with making policy and budget recommendations to reduce the incidence of maternal mortality and severe maternal morbidity in Oregon. The committee must submit a progress report to the legislature by January 1st, 2019, and the first of its biannual reports by January 1st, 2021. The measure has had previous hearings in the House Committee on Healthcare on February 9th and February 14th. There is a small fiscal impact to OHA. The agency estimates the impact of this bill to be 46,202 general fund, one position, and 0.17 FTE for the 17-19 biennium. There are two amendments. The -5 amendment just adds that general fund appropriation for OHA, and the -6 amendment modifies provisions related to the committee meetings and records, and these amendments do not change the original fiscal.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4133 to the full committee with a due.
We need
to. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the A5 and A6 amendments to House Bill 4133.
All right. Chair Senator Hayward has moved the -A5 and -A6 amendments to House Bill 4133. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4133 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward has moved House Bill 4133 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none.
So,
are you discussion or
discussion?
All right. So, actually, we'll go back.
Representative, discussion on the main bill, not the amendment.
So, yeah, please, yep. Please.
Okay, thank you. So, my concern with this bill, and it actually came through early childhood rather than health care when it came through the policy positions. My concern with this bill is there isn't any upper caps to the amount of funds that can be in these accounts. So I want to get that on the record as a concern that somebody in theory could have significant funds in some of these pensions or retirement accounts.
4133.
Yeah.
Representative.
Ooh. That changes things.
I was like, that went through.
I was so confused about what
all right, never mind. I like right. The bill.
All right.
It's a preview.
All right. Any further discussion on this bill? All right.
Thank you.
Any objections? All right, seeing none, motion carries.
I'll take this to the full Representative Kenny Garrett of the House. The Senate, please.
Okay.
We're the co-chairs, if that's okay.
Co-chair Steiner Hayward will take it to the full on the floor, and then Alyssa Kenny Garrett will take it to the floor.
And Mr. Chair, just a really quick comment. This is, although not every single health professional is specifically called out in this bill, we expect that every kind of healthcare professional who takes care of women who are planning to become pregnant, are pregnant, or young children, be aware and involved, because it's our joint requirement and goal to make sure that we have the healthiest moms and babies in the state. So.
All right, with that, thank you very much. We'll close the work session on House Bill 4133. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 4020.
Okay, co-chairs, members of the committee, the next bill is House Bill 4020. It requires the Oregon Health Authority to implement a new program to license extended stay centers. The bill directs the Health Evidence Review Committee to develop evidence-based guidelines regarding the patient characteristics and surgical procedures that may be appropriate for ambulatory surgical centers and extended stay centers. The commission must provide a report of the timeline and the plan for implementing the guidelines to the legislature by the 2019 regular session. In addition, the bill requires the Oregon Patient Safety Commission to include extended stay centers in its voluntary adverse event reporting program. The bill has been heard in the House Committee on Healthcare February 9th and 14th also, and it has a fiscal impact. OHA estimates the fiscal impact of the bill to be about $398,520 total funds, one position and 0.58 FTE for the 17-19 biennium. You do have three amendments. The -9 amendment adds the appropriation for OHA. The -A11 amendment requires hospitals to have written financial assistance policy accessible to patients. And the -12 amendment authorizes OHA to establish an annual renewal fee not to exceed $5,000 to cover ongoing costs for regulating the extended stay centers. And Andy Easton from the Oregon Association of Hospital and Health Systems and Jessica Adamson from Providence are here if you want more information on the amendments.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the A9, A11, and A12 amendments to House Bill 4020.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward has moved adoption of the -A9, A11, and A12 amendments to House Bill 4020. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4020 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward has moved House Bill 4020 as amended to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Bueller.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Rayfield. I have to declare a potential conflict of interest in ownership in surgery centers.
Further discussion? All right. Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries.
Somebody else can take this one. I've got
the two already. I'll take this to the full. And then I will take it to the floor on the House side. Or is there somebody else who should take that to the floor?
It's an interrupt.
You want it, Rob?
Yeah.
All right. We'll have Representative Nose carry that to the floor. Thanks for coming to the committee,
when you
Rob.
Show up committee,
appreciate
Rob.
It. And then on the Senate side,
Senator Gelser.
Okay. Senator Gelser will take it on the Senate side.
Thanks, Sarah.
All right. With that, we'll go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 4020. Open up a work session on House Bill 4079.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, the next bill up for you today is House Bill 4079, which requires the Department of Human Services to disregard pension and retirement accounts as financial resources available to families when determining eligibility for the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program. The fiscal impact on the program is indeterminate. The agency's historical experience is that very few families have been denied TANF for being over the resource limit. The people coming in for that service are generally very poor and have exhausted any savings that they've had set aside. The current resource for TANF, that limit for TANF applicants is $2,500. There would be an indeterminate cost associated with making some changes in the new eligibility system to go ahead and make sure we can track and record exemptions for these assets. That's indeterminate, will be built into the current system programming effort. The agency did mention that, you know, ultimately down the road, if we were in a recession, we could have more families that become eligible because they have income conditions that may be more dire, and they would still have some retirement account savings to, or assets available to use in the future if they were allowed into this program. There's no amendments. The bill did have hearings in the House Early Child and Family Supports Committee back on the 8th and 13th of February.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4079 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Stena Hayward has moved House Bill 4079 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Hayden.
Yes, thank you. Now, I do note that we went out of order, but I should have been listening closer rather than reading the notes. So the discussion point on this, it came through Early Childhood Committee, and you'll see there on the vote record that I supported it. I'm going to continue to support the bill because I do feel that the scenario in which somebody has $1 million in some pension plan, they probably would not be applying for these. But there is a potential loophole there where that could be abused. I think that the logistics of not having to go through that requirement check are worth the benefit to try and streamline this process. But I just wanted to put that on record that there, I tried to get an upper cap on it just in case. But anyway.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Buehler.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Greenfield. So, to make sure that we're all in agreement here that we're voting to pass something that we don't know how much it's going to cost. Is that a fair characterization of this? Is that what indeterminate means? I just want to make sure that's what indeterminate means to everyone else. That's what it means to me.
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Buehler, member of the subcommittee, in this case, yes, indeterminate means we don't know. Sometimes we have indeterminate and it might be big. Sometimes we have indeterminate, it might be small. Sometimes it's indeterminate and we're not going to know for a period of time. In this case, based on information from the agency as well as some looking I did at other states and what they do with their TANF policies, generally what has been demonstrated is that changing asset limits in general for TANF does not necessarily increase the number of applicants. Again, like Representative Hayden said, most of the people coming into this program don't have a lot of assets. So it's unlikely that there would be a large number of folks who would suddenly be eligible for TANF and still be sitting on retirement accounts. It is possible at a point in the future that there could be people who would not have been deemed eligible for TANF before with this change. We have no idea how many, what those numbers would be. For context, for TANF, you have to have a family with minor children in the household. So there's a lot of folks who wouldn't even be eligible. And basically, I think it's like 96% of the adults and families getting TANF are at age 50 or lower. So it's and I think most of the time we think about retirement savings and benefits accruing to people who are older in the population. So I think there is, again, a little bit of risk. We wouldn't want to say this is determinant, but I think it's risk that's not going to materialize in a significant fashion.
Further discussion? All right, seeing none, are there any objections to the motion? Please note that Representative Buehler objects to the motion. Motion carries. We'll go ahead and have Senator DeBoer, would you be willing to carry this to full?
Sure.
Okay, well, Senator DeBoer carry that to full. Nathanson on the House floor and Senator Beyer on the Senate floor. With that, we'll go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 4079. And then before we move on to the next bill, I thought we would introduce, we have some folks from Corvallis, Ashbrook. If you guys want to wave your hands, all the kids from Ashbrook down in the Corvallis area, thanks for being here. And anybody who wants to talk to, aspiring students after this, feel free. They're from my district and Senator Gelser's district. So pretty neat. All right, with that, we have one more bill. We'll go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 4129. Ms. Ames.
House Bill 4129 establishes a license for residential care facility administrators within the Health Licensing Office, which is part of the Oregon Health Authority. The bill specifies qualifications for the license and expects the Long-Term Care Administrators Board to adopt rules to implement much of this, including the licensure and administering the exam. The bill also renames the old Nursing Home Administrator Board to the Long-Term Care Administrators Board. There is a -A4 amendment, which makes a number of technical adjustments, such as adopting rules for transitional emergency situations, and it does include some of the specific requirements for licensure in statute rather than simply being adopted by rule. It does not change the fiscal impact. HLO anticipates 500 to 700 new licensees and expects to set fees at a level to recover costs, which at this point they anticipate to be about $100 for a new license and $130 renewal annually. They do expect to need two additional staff starting January of 2019 and a third in July of 19. The way that HLO staffs in general is each year they get some more of these little changes in their boards, and they stretch the staff as long as they can, and then at some point they do need additional staff. The agency has sufficient other funds limitation that can be used, but the two new positions for this biennium will be established in the statewide budget reconciliation bill, House Bill 5201.
Okay. All right. Madam Co-Chair.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, move House Bill 40. Oh, sorry, move the A4 amendment to 4129.
Senator Snyder-Hurd has moved the -A4 amendment to House Bill 4129. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries.
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 4129 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Snyder-Hurd has moved House Bill 4129 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to acknowledge that I don't hear much from representative aides, but Pam Marsh's aide, Jackson Limhouse, provided testimony, and he actually works in this field. And it was really nice to hear from him, very well presented and clarified it was his personal. The other thing, I'm really concerned that these workers are generally very underpaid. So I'm concerned that we're adding potential fee. And I really wanted the Department of Human Services that monitors come to more of a positive approach so that they can help rather than come in with a hammer, which we've seen some in the past, and I really appreciate the new director's position on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? All right, seeing none, is there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. We'll go ahead and have myself carry that to the full. Senator Gelsler carried to the Senate floor, and then Representative McEwen carried to the House floor. With that, we'll go ahead and close the work.
Oh. May I ask that Representative Escobar want to co-carry that with me? He's worked very hard on this bill as well.
No. we'll go ahead and have Representative Escobar also co-carry that. With that, we'll go ahead and close. Yes, Representative Hayden.
We're going to cut that clip right after now. Kidding.
we'll go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 4129. Ms. Ames, anything else? Oh, that's right. And then we have an informational hearing with the Department of Human Services and Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities. We'll go ahead and open that and call up Lilia Tennedy and Eric Moore.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, this is the informational meeting we had scheduled for last week that got canceled due to inclement weather. As you know, the Department of Human Services, in this particular program, Intellectual Development Disabilities, has been working to address a $12 million generic reduction that was made in the budget for the current biennium. And in trying to manage that, they've come before you at every intermediate meeting to have that discussion. They've been continuing to dig into the budget and trying to come up with some options to at least try to address how to deal with the reduction over the course of the biennium. They're here to give you a little bit of just a brief background and some update on kind of where they are today and on this ongoing issue.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lilia Tennenty. I'm the Director of the Office of Developmental Disability Services in the Department of Human Services. I'm glad to come before you again today to discuss the work done by the staff and leadership team of ODDS and by our community partners to address budget challenges that ODDS has faced for since implementation of the K-Plan. The outline for today's presentation, I'm going to talk just a little bit about history because I know there's some newer members to the committee. We'll discuss the budget note, and then I'll go through the steps on the generic reduction, and then talk about the changes we're planning, and then what might come later. Do you want to introduce yourself, or did I jump ahead?
Oh, no. For the record, co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Eric Moore, the CFO for DHS.
Thank you. To start with, for today, talking just a little bit about the history. In July 2013, the Oregon Legislature approved implementation of the K-Plan, or Community First Choice Option, for the state of Oregon long-term care supports and services. This directive impacted both the Aging and People with Disabilities Program and the Office of Developmental Disabilities Program. For ODDS, what it did was it removed budget caps and what we were calling crisis-based eligibility for children and adults. Ultimately, very few children were served prior to implementation of the K-Plan, and only those children who were in some situation that put them in crisis were able to access a limited number of services. The K-Plan opened the door to all children to receive, with intellectual and developmental disabilities, being able to receive services. And for adults, it required a functional needs assessment and for children, but for adults, the budgetary impact was that a budgetary cap that had been in place for a number of years in a support services waiver program, the cap needed to be removed, and we needed to fund and authorize services based on a functional needs assessment. So essentially, all at once, the door to services for children was opened wide, which has been a good thing, and also the caps for adults receiving in-home services was removed, and so it has had some budgetary implications, even though we know overall we have more people who need a higher level of support receiving that support, and we have more children who need services receiving services. Fairly soon after implementation for ODDS, the budgetary implications became clear, and starting in the session that was July 2015, we got a budget note for both APD and DD directing us to report on options for stabilizing services. We did complete that report, and it was submitted, and follows along the lines of different things that we've been discussing since that time around budget drivers and how to impact budget drivers. In fall of 2016, we did ODDS, based on data, significant amount of data and stakeholder input, implement changes to how we were authorizing in-home services. We had made it through that process for several months when, in spring 2017, a lawsuit was filed that ultimately had us go back and reauthorize a higher level of services and agree to work with the plaintiffs, both the plaintiffs and stakeholders, on a new assessment and planning process. Those are things that we'd already been doing, but we were hadn't fully completed that process, and we're still working on that process today. And so at this point, we've agreed to a preliminary injunction. We're working with the plaintiffs and the stakeholders to move forward on a new assessment and a new way to authorize services. So that's where we are. That brought us to the budget note for 2017-19, which after many, many discussions with the co-chairs and members of the committee and stakeholders and everyone else involved, we ultimately were given the direction to find $12 million of a general fund in lieu of more specific actions. We did have a number of specific reductions, like eliminating funding for regional programs, cutting in half the family support program that we still have, and some other things, but the big focus was on this $12 million general fund reduction. And the budget note, as you see here, directed us to come back and continue to discuss with the co-chairs and with the committee and present on steps that we're planning to take or will be taking to implement this $12 million general fund reduction. That's why I've been back here pretty much every legislative day since the budget passed, presenting to you on various options that we've been looking at. Today, I'm pleased to present on a number of management actions, one of which I've talked to you about previously, others of which have only have really come to light over the course of the last month, that we think, if all goes according to plan and CMS approves everything we need, we should be able to fund the $12 million general fund reduction that we were directed to take. The first reductions, management actions, are ones that I presented on in January. We have a couple of contracts related to housing repairs for things called, for homes called KIPP homes, that were, the cost for those repairs has been projected to increase, but we're seeing, and because we know several of the bonds are ending, that funding is going to be leveling off, if not decreasing, in the future. We also had a rent subsidy program with a similar thing where we've held it pretty consistently at a specific funding amount, and we had some inflation built into the budget, and so we put $1.3 million forward at that time to go toward the $12 million reduction. Since I was here in January, we've had more time to look at overall cost per case in the program to see where things are going. We didn't want to jump into making suggesting reductions based on cost per case early on, too early on, just based on the what we've all come to recognize is the volatility in the DD budget under the CAPE plan. And so we have now, though, after looking at expenditure data since this biennium started, we're comfortable saying that we have about $5.96 million in cost per case savings that we're able to put toward the $12 million reduction. Obviously, we're noting that, we're putting that forward. That also comes with risk if something happens. I just want to be clear that that we're doing that. We think this is a reasonable step, but as with everything related to the DD budget right now, it comes with a little bit of risk that things might change for the rest of the remaining, I don't know the number of months, but the remaining amount of the biennium. Thank you. The last management action that I will tell you about that we haven't really talked about because we've had to go through a lot of different steps internally within DHS and OHA to get to this point, but we were recently able to submit to CMS a request to increase our federal match for the work we do in our billing system. We have a billing system called Express. We identified that everything that goes into Express is Medicaid-funded billing services for everything we do, and CMS offers a higher federal match. We've been getting 50-50, which is the general Medicaid administrative match. We think for the work related to Express, based on other areas of DHS that we've looked at, and just based on the requirements to get the higher match, we think we can go get a 75% federal, 25% state match, which would then give us roughly $6 million in additional funding that we could put toward the $12 million. So if you add all of that up, if CMS approves our request, we would be then, for this biennium only, covering that $12 million reduction. I want to say that I checked in this morning with the team of folks who are working on this particular request. We do know CMS is looking at it now because they sent back questions. So we're meeting this afternoon to look at their questions, and then we'll obviously get the responses to them as quickly as we can, but at least we know they're looking at it, and we hope to get a response in the next month. So those are the actions that we are putting forward to take to address the $12 million reduction, understanding that one of them requires CMS approval, the other one has a little bit of just minor risk based on what might happen in the future, the rest of the biennium. As a result of these steps, I want to say that we are not expecting to make any budget-related programmatic changes at this time. The budget-related programmatic changes are things that I've come and presented to this committee on that we started working on several months ago, related to potentially capping the number of children coming into services, in home services. We are not looking to do that or go forward with that. The next slide does talk about policy changes that we are continuing to work on. In the broader DD stakeholder community, there has been long been talk or discussion about moving away from the way our waivers were structured to a children's and adult waiver. We are still planning to do that. These waivers right now and K-Plan amendments to help us align with what we need to do to move into our new assessment and planning process are out for public comment. However, I want to stress that with the children's waiver, our plan at this point is to build in the number of kids, look at forecast, and continue to build in the number of children that we expect to come into the program, and not hold it, not hold the cap down to create a waiting list for children's services. So I want to clarify those two things. We are continuing to make this particular change as a result because we think it's a good policy decision, but we are not taking the budget actions that I presented to you in past sessions or past legislative days related to the children's waiver. Looking ahead, because while we presented on options that we think will address the immediate biennium's issues, we know that DD budget stability, sustainability continues to be a discussion. This is a slide I just redid from Ways and Means last session, just because I think this is the crux of everything that drives our budget. It's either the number what drives our budget is the number of people we serve, which to change that we would make eligibility changes, change how we identify a DD IDD eligibility criteria, the number of services used, which we tried to reduce the number of services used and ultimately were stopped through legal action and are now working to address this, but we don't know exactly what that's going to look like. And then the third thing that drives our budget is provider rates. And obviously for us anyway, the legislature did approve a provider rate increase last session, which we appreciate. And given the difficulties our providers are having with staffing, identifying good DSPs to work in our provider agencies, and other issues, reducing provider rates to address budget issues just is not something that we want to propose or considering right now. So these are our big budget drivers. I do want to say that based on looking at what we've seen with the children coming into service, we think a lot of this is based on what we would call pent-up demand. All those years where kids weren't able to get services, the K-plan started, we're still seeing kids come in. We're following more closely to forecast than we were in the first couple of biennia of the K-plan, and we are seeing, while it's continuing to increase, it's not increasing at the level it was increasing initially, so we do expect this to level off. Hopefully, based on a paper that we had done, we're looking at 2019 for kids, the kids coming into DD services, really just to level off. And then kids will age out, go to adult services, new kids will come in, but we won't have that just continuous growth. So based on all of these options, I just want to remind committee members that we've looked at eligibility changes because at this point right now, with not being able to do much with how services are authorized, nor not being able to do or wanting to do anything with provider rates, that leaves eligibility on the table. And these are the changes we've discussed. Some of these changes, actually all of these changes, I think were recommended in that report I mentioned that was commissioned in July of 2015. Change our eligibility requirement, move the IQ to 70 and below, as opposed to leaving a margin between 70 and 75, which we do now. Increase what are called level of care criteria to 3 significant areas of impairment as opposed to 2. 3 is the most you can do under the federal standard. Oregon does 2. We would increase that to 3. And then not a popular one, but one that has been recommended is when the maintenance of effort requirement goes away for the Affordable Care Act, looking at ending parental income disregard for children's in-home services again. So these are the changes that have been on the table. They remain on the table. All of them will take time to implement if we're directed to do so, but I just wanted to bring those forward again as part of the overall presentation and reminder of kind of where we're at and what we've looked at. At this point, I'm glad to take questions, comments, feedback.
All right.
And before I get to that, I want to, Representative Alonso Leon also has some guests here, and I thought I would allow her to introduce them.
Thank you, co-chair. I just want to introduce our Woodburn High School students. If you guys want to wave, they're a little bit shy, but thank you for being here today.
It is early in the morning, right? So, but you have to be at school anyway, so maybe this is a better place to be, although some might debate that. Senator Gelzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say thank you for working so hard on this. I know we've had a lot of discussion in this committee about the importance of the kids' services. I know the conversation will continue, but you have been relentless in working to address this $12 million shortfall without impacting the individuals that you work so hard to serve every day. So thank you for your leadership.
Thank you.
Further discussion or question? Yeah, Representative Alonso Leon.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to underscore what the Senator just said. A lot of folks came to my office and were really worried about losing programming support, and that was one thing that was really important to them. So I really appreciate the work that you all did so that we could keep the programming going, because that's very important to our constituents. So thank you.
Yes, Representative Hayden.
Thank you. As far as the income disregard under the waiver, am I understanding you correct that we're not in this biennium looking at putting those caps on, but the waiver would still, if approved by CMS, allow that in future bienniums?
Co-chairs, Representative Hayden, yes, that's what we're planning to do, is create a children's and adult waiver, no caps right now, but ultimately at a later date in the future, if that was directed, then we could make the change with CMS at that time.
Would that require another waiver?
It, co-chairs, Representative Hayden, it wouldn't require another waiver. It would just require us going in and telling CMS, instead of these numbers, which reflect continued growth, we want to stop here and just keep things flat. So it wouldn't be a new waiver. It would be a waiver amendment.
So follow up,
please.
So to be clear, the current waiver that we're applying for would allow for future caps.
Co-chairs, Representative Hayden, yes. We're not proposing caps now, but future caps could be applied in the future. Caps could be applied in the future.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Sagard.
Ms. Tennedy, under our current waiver, we could do that also, right? We could do a state plan amendment that would just change the caps even under our current waiver system. It's not that this waiver that we're applying for now would change it, right?
Yeah, Co-Chair Senator Steiner Hayward, yes. At any time with any waivers, we tell CMS this is how many people we can afford to fund under a C waiver, and we could change that at any time. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you.
Senator Gelzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And following up on that, I would imagine that the conversations in this committee have made it very clear that that would probably be a noisy and rambunctious conversation and probably would not happen in the dark of night without a significant conversation.
Co-chairs and Senator Gelzer, that is absolutely correct. Anything we do at this point, as actually the full budget note for this biennium, and I would expect to carry through for future biennium, says, any eligibility changes that we're considering have to come back before the committee.
And one follow-up?
Please.
Just one other compliment. It's so great to have pictures of actual children with intellectual and developmental disabilities in the slideshow about intellectual and developmental disabilities. So whoever is doing the slide deck, thanks for choosing the right kids.
I will pass that along. She will appreciate that.
All right. Further discussion? All right. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the informational session. Ms. Byerly.
So I believe the work of this committee in Mather will be completed.
So with that, on that note, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting.
Wait. You can't adjourn before I say thank you to our members.
I hit the gavel, though.
Or adjourn.
Just, Eric didn't turn the blue light off.
Should we open another meeting?
No, we can't open another meeting. It's not posted. I'm just going to say thank you to all of our committee members and to all who have come and testified this year and put hard work into these budgets. And as always, to our amazing LFO staff. Ms. Ames, I know, is listening. Ms. Toe, come from Points Committee a lot. Ms. Byerly is sitting right here with us. And we couldn't do the work without all of your diligence. And Eric, thank you for keeping us on track and making sure that... What?
Really good job.
I missed that one.
No, you didn't miss it. You didn't miss it. He gaveled prematurely. So, and quietly. So now you can gavel for real, Mr. Chair.
All right, I'll just be efficient.
Thank you.
All right.